Log Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Good evening. This is Diane Murray Ward. Welcome to Faceted Gems. We're listening to the wonderful music of Brian Snow. Welcome. This is Faceted Gems. I am your host. I am a reward. Gems, give thanks to our blessings. Enjoy life and loved ones now. Mentor when you can. And let's take part of the silence that allows us to hear the inner voice and concentrate on the good. This evening's guest is wonderful, my wonderful friend, Dr. Susan Cohen. Welcome, Susan.
Hey, Diane. It's so wonderful to be with you.
Thank you, thank you. Everyone, I have the pleasure of working with Susan many years ago at Long Island University, and this is a woman who has been able to transform herself and really epitomizes one of the reasons that I have her on this show, Faceted Gems. Susan, tell the audience a bit about yourself, please.
Well, I'm a social worker. I have my doctorate in social work, and what I've been doing for the last 28 years is working with people whose pets are sick. You know, pets are really members of the family these days, and when I started, if you said, gee, I'm really upset that my golden retriever is ill or that I have a big decision to make, people would laugh at you. They would say, oh, I thought you were talking about something serious. The situation has changed a lot now, but it's because of the work of people who get out there and really support pet lovers. And I have really been able to follow my dreams in a big way.
How did you develop this interest?
You know, I think I was, from my earliest childhood, an animal lover who would cry. You know, I cried over every perfectly healthy kitten that my cat had that went to a perfectly good home, and I certainly cried over animals and cartoons and movies and stuff. But when I got to college and lost my first cat, I realized that it was what a tremendous loss that it really was. And from my 20s on, I started thinking, you know, there really ought to be somebody to help you when you're having to make these big decisions. And of course, being me, I thought that's something I'd like to do, but there was no such job, so I had to make one up.
And, you know, I've got to say, honestly, when you started working in Animal Medical Center, I must admit, I had no idea that it is a hospital. I really didn't even know that pets, quite frankly, could come down with diseases almost like anything we can come down with. So it was so eye-opening to visit you, and the wonderful staff you have there was very patient with me, because although I like pets, I really only had one pet that I truly, truly, truly loved. And, you know, when he died, he died. But I really was impressed with the whole operation that you have there at the Animal Medical Center. And you're absolutely correct. For a lot of people, their pet is an extension of their family.
Absolutely. And for a lot of people, it's the best relationship they've ever had. So, you know, that's not to say that you can't have a wonderful family life and friends and still really miss your pet. But if you're living alone, you're living in a city, it can be a little cold sometimes. And to have somebody who's just thrilled that you've come home, can't wait to see what's in that paper bag you have, and you know, curls up on the bed with you at night, it's a pretty intense relationship. And there are many wonderful veterinarians around the country who really get it now and who provide very high levels of care. It used to be that you had to go to a university setting or you know, one of the gigantic practices to get good care, but now it's much more widely available. And so if you love your pet, you can invest thousands and thousands of dollars in keeping that pet well or restoring him or her to health, and then you can have several more years. And it's, you know, the decisions become very difficult at that point, you know, if it's like now in a bad economic time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're really having to decide food on the table for your kids or, you know, $5,000 surgery without insurance, you know, it's a very tough call because, again, your pet may be, you know, absolutely a member of your family and maybe your best relationship.
Right. When we met, we were counselors, and
I
know your skills as a counselor. I've met students of ours that we've had a long time ago that are adults now, wonderful, functioning, wonderful beings that remember you fondly. And I know that your counseling skills was one of those transferable skills that you were able to use in this setting as well. But I also recall you had to almost convince people that this was really important, that bereavement counseling as you know, as a field, as an area that is really crucial to the whole I don't know, to the whole makeup of what it means to get a pet well, when a pet is sick, well, how to nurture, just like we do with people. And I know it wasn't easy at first for you. How were you able to convince them that this was really a worthwhile endeavor?
You know, I have to tell you the truth. I wish I could say to you that as a woman and as a pioneer, you know, I grabbed him by the throat and made him see the light.
But that's not what happened. Okay.
I have to say that while most people did think it was pretty weird, and I was frankly looking forward to being considered eccentric for years and years, I got very lucky when I first met someone that might potentially be interested in this. Turned out he was there already, because this was Dr. William Kay. And he, in the old days, you couldn't train to be a veterinary neurologist.
Right.
You had to go to a human hospital and study there, and then bring it back. So he'd been studying at Bellevue, and he'd been working at the Animal Medical Center. And he said, "I saw the same kind of attachment and the same level of upset at the animal hospital that I saw at the human hospital."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it took a while to get it off the ground, and there were fits and starts, and I thought it would never happen. And Diane was, you were just such a good friend to me, because, of course, everybody thought it was pretty weird. I had a perfectly wonderful job at Long Island University working with disabled college students that
mm-hmm.
I loved. And so, you know, why leave a nice, secure job in what, again, was not a good job market to go to an animal hospital and try to start this program? I really honestly thought it was 50-50 that I'd be out on the street again in a year trying to explain to potential employers why I had done such a crazy thing. But I got lucky and it worked out.
Well, I had faith in you. You know, I didn't fully understand it, I must admit. I just saw how much of a drive you had. I mean, you were very, very passionate about it. You were logical, and you made a believer out of me very, very quickly. And I think that's why it's so wonderful that you're able to now look back at it and say, well, you know, this is what I did. Is there anything you would have done differently, do you think?
I don't think so. I have just retired from that job after 28 mm-hmm. years. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Looking back over it, I am so happy with the way it went. There's always more to do than you can possibly do. So, you know, it would have been great, I suppose, if there had been somebody who loved to write following me around writing it all down. But I was really touched when I sent a note out to all my colleagues in the field to say, you know what, that we were wrapping up. The notes that I got back really reduced me to tears, because what they said was, if you hadn't been so nice to me when I first called you, and this gets to your mentoring question, if you hadn't been so nice to me when I first called you, I wouldn't be in this field, and frankly, there wouldn't be a field. So I have to say that you know, whatever I can leave behind, I feel that the message is out there. It's a different world. There are Hallmark cards for pet loss.
That's
and
right.
It's just a much better place for pet lovers.
So do you see yourself still evolving, and like into what?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I'm taking a breather right now, and just, you know, relaxing and enjoying having this time with my family. But I'll be sticking my hand back in one way or another. In 2 weeks I'm going to do a big veterinary conference to give a talk on something called compassion fatigue, which is something that's very rampant in a lot of the helping professions. The concept of compassion fatigue is that you, not that you're burned out and you've gone cold, but that you are driving yourself so hard that you're going to just explode. And you kind of know you're doing it to yourself, but you can't stop because nobody's as good at what you're doing as you are, and you're taking everybody's problems inside. And in the veterinary field, that's a big problem. So anyway, to answer your question, I'm absolutely going to keep my hand into the human-animal bond field in various ways. And I may do some teaching. I love lecturing. You know, and I'd love actually some feedback from any of your listeners about what they think the world needs now in this arena. You know, does it need another book? Does it need a website? Does it need a blog? Does it need, you know, podcasts? What does it need? I'd love to hear what people think they could use.
Right. You know, I was always excited every time I accidentally caught you either on the air or I saw your name mentioned somewhere, and I could say, yeah, I knew her. I knew her back when, you know. But you definitely have the skill to and the enthusiasm to be a lecturer who keeps the person's attention. I mean, you know, you don't want to sit in a lecture and it's boring, or you don't want to sit in a lecture because you have to or because it's credits or anything like that. And I mean, you know, and you and I had partook in a class once at Columbia, and so we go way back and do a lot of different things that try to make subject matter interesting. And that's why, I mean, it would be a great loss if you didn't continue to, and I'd be surprised if you didn't continue to keep your hand in the field, whether as a lecturer or as someone who writes, because you've written quite a few articles. And so I think that's probably, you know, where I, because I won't be able to find you because you'll be all over the place, which would be a good thing. Where are you now, Susan? But I think it's wonderful because you still have that enthusiasm. You're definitely not burnt out in the field, obviously.
I'm not. And, you know, one of the things that people have asked me is, you know, how can you deal with illness and death and people's pain and sorrow all the time? And, you know, for anyone who's interested in being in the helping professions in any way, you have to also take care of yourself. You know, that means being healthy. It means having other relationships. It means having areas of your life that maybe have nothing to do with work that restore you and sustain you. For example, I never had a private practice in all those years because I was given, you know, 100% at work. And the only way I could do that was to go home and, you know, cook for my kids and enjoy my husband and, you know, have friends and things like that, and not continue to do it after I went home. You just have to find a balance if you're going to be giving that much of yourself to people. And then that's how, I think that's part of how I lasted as long, because I really tried to keep restoring myself.
And I found it really very, very helpful to be able to refer people to you, because I know people that I've referred to your bereavement counseling group.
Mm-hmm. And they would come back and say, and I didn't expect to hear from them. I just said, you know, well, I do have a friend, and she can, you know, call her and see if she can help you. And I would get feedback, and they would say, you know, this is wonderful. I didn't even know something like this existed. She was great. And they may have needed you for just, you know, one or two sessions, whatever, just to mm-hmm. be able to know that there's other people who think like them and who could understand their grief and their loss. And like you said earlier, not think that they're crazy or there's anything wrong with them, and let that go and release and cry together and grieve together. And then there were others that I know that stayed with you a little longer in those group sessions because they needed it. And everybody was at a different level. But I got to tell you, every last one of them felt it was such a major help because I couldn't help them. I could feel bad, but I said, you need to go to an expert. You need to go to somebody who really, really understands and feels the way you do and can help you and get you in touch with other people. And I find that that's probably one of the best things we can do is to help people network and share and not feel so isolated in their grief and their loss.
Absolutely. Diane, I think you're really onto something, and it's one of the things that I ever did that I'm the proudest of was that pet loss group. Now we have support groups for everything, but back then there was maybe AA, which I'd never been mm-hmm. to, and it was not what we were taught to do in school at all. But there were a lot of people out there who thought they were crazy or who were being told they were crazy because they cared that much about a pet. And I knew they weren't, and I figured if we put them all together in the same room, they would see that they weren't crazy and they would be able to help one another. You know, and that's what happened, you know. And the other piece of it that I didn't anticipate that was a real revelation is the amount of guilt that people had when their pets died. We all, or often, I would say, have some guilt or regret when a human being that we care about dies. But we kind of say, well, after all, she was an adult, and if she didn't want to exercise, you know, that's on her. Pets we think of as very innocent and very helpless. And so everything that goes wrong, we tend to think is our fault. And when you get everybody together in the room and you look around the room and you see that everybody else loved their pet as much as you did, tried as hard as you did, and their pets didn't make it either, you begin to just almost subconsciously absorb the idea that no matter how hard we try, the end is going to come for them. And it doesn't have to be anybody's fault, certainly not yours. So in addition to just being able to tell their story without being laughed at, I think people's stories helped each member understand in that sometimes loss is inevitable. But, you know, if you have enough support, you can get through it.
Right, right. Let me just say you are listening to Faceted Gems on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm your host, Diane Murray Ward. I have the pleasure of having Dr. Susan Cohen as my guest this evening. You know, one of the things that I asked my guests, and you kind of mentioned it because it was you've always had a love of animals, and you know, you would cry at the drop of a hat when it came to a bird or a cat or whatever. Is there anyone that inspired you though?
You know, there was nobody doing what I did. That came out of my head. But I'll tell you two things that inspired me. One, when I was working at Long Island University with disabled college students, I was doing career counseling, as you were, mm-hmm. and I picked up a book by a guy named Tom Jackson called Guerrilla Tactics in the Job Market, Guerrilla like Guerrilla Warfare. And it had a lot of wonderful questions and exercises in it. And I thought, oh, this would be perfect to use with the students. And I was on the subway, and I stumbled on this question, and it really affected me. The question was, what are two or three job duties you enjoy so much you would practically pay somebody to let you do them? And I remembered that idea I'd had years before about talking to people when their pets were sick. So that sort of motivated me to get more serious about this idea. And I would say that within the field, there was a wonderful man, Dr. Leo Busted from Washington. Now, this man, I call him a Lutheran Zen master because he was the most thoughtful, most compassionate man, and a devout Lutheran. And he had been through some horrible experiences in his life. He was a POW in World War II and nearly starved to death. His wife, whom he adored, suddenly went deaf from a from an infection, and his daughter, who was a missionary in Africa, died suddenly. And when they wrote, they said, "We loved her so much, we've already buried her here in Africa." So he didn't even get a chance to say goodbye to her.
Wow.
And he took each one of these experiences, each one of these immense challenges, and made something positive. And that was a tremendous inspiration to me.
Wow. Part of the message is to continue to read. You never know what, when you picked up that book, that wasn't the, you didn't know what lesson you were going to learn.
Oh, I didn't expect anything for myself
out of it,
you know, and
not
boy.
For yourself, but you were thinking of your students.
And then look what
you gleaned from it.
And that's a question I often ask people now when they are unsure. I say, what are two or three things that you enjoy so much you would practically pay somebody to let you do them?
Those are wonderful questions.
Yeah.
And that you can use at any stage of your life.
Absolutely.
And probably they might be different at different stages of your life also.
That's right, and it gets you out of thinking about specific job titles. There was no job title for what I wanted to do. I mean, it didn't exist as a, you know, as a career. So, I mean, I guess if you had told me in college that there would be such a job, I could have told you I wanted to do it, but
right.
It didn't exist. And I think what's really important for people in terms of following their own dreams is to think about what you're good at. And very often, I have to tell you, you're going to have to ask your friends. Because the things that you're really good at are so much a part of you, you can't see them. You can't believe other people can't make a jump shot like that. You can't believe other people can't add that list of figures. Whatever it is, you have to ask your friends, what am I good at? And then you look around your community, you look around your life, and say, well, what are some problems that need fixing? What are some things that need doing? And if you put what you're good at to something that needs doing, you'll have a career that won't feel like work.
Is it because you're so much in the midst of it? It's like because it's right in front of you, you don't see it? Is that why that happens?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The stuff that comes automatically to you, you will not see. You have to ask your friends, usually. And again, these more open-ended questions get you out of, job titles and degrees and whatever, and help you think about what you could bring to this world that's special to you and that needs doing. And you'll be very surprised if you ask your friends what you're good at. I remember, and I really had forgotten this, I was going to go to, I think, my 20th high school reunion, and I went through my old yearbook, which I hadn't looked at in 20 years, and in it were lots of comments, thanks for listening to my problems on the bus, remember all the wonderful conversations we had at slumber parties. By that point, I was already a social worker. And I remember looking at that thinking, wow, there it was. I was 16, 17 years old.
Right.
It was already there. I didn't get it. I didn't know what those people were talking about. Who wouldn't listen to somebody's problems on the bus? Who wouldn't sit up all night
right.
at a slumber party? So it's really when it's,
but you'd
you know,
be surprised. There's so many people that wouldn't.
Yeah, a lot of times
you know,
it didn't even occur to me not to
right.
do that. So I've been very lucky to be able to work in ways that were very much a reflection of who I was. I was able to live my values and do things that I cared about and get paid.
On top of that, that's the perk, you got paid.
Yeah.
And if anyone was interested in this kind of area, could they, how would they go about, number one, studying it, number two, getting a mentor, number three, making the right connections so that they could have the foundation needed so that they could, you know, maybe see their dream. As you're speaking, someone out there might be thinking, wow, this is fantastic. I didn't even know you could do that. How do I do this? What would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest a couple of things. First of all, there are probably never going to be a lot of paid jobs doing just human-animal bond work.
Okay.
But there are a lot of jobs doing something else where you're the human-animal bond expert. So What you want to do is get a degree or get training in something where you can make a living. So let's say you're interested in physical therapy or you're interested in art therapy or whatever. Make sure you get the right credentials for that and then become the expert in your organization on the role of animals in that problem. There are therapeutic animals. There are people who draw animals. There are, and forget even just the therapy health field. There are lots of commercial companies that provide services or make things or advertise, you know, about animals.
Right.
So you can become the expert, you know, as long as you can make a living at it. There are a couple of different master's programs now and occasional courses. I would go online and type in human-animal bond course and see what you find. There are a couple of social work programs now. There's a program in the Northeast that's a master's in animals and society, I believe it's called. And you can always get in touch with me. So I'd be glad to cheer you on if I can and point you in the right direction if I know of one.
And I think it's very important, as you said before, that people have an out, that
mm-hmm.
people have something else that they can do and
mm-hmm.
not just get so absorbed into whatever it is they do, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is they do. And especially I find working with people in terms of what might be something of an emotional nature in counseling, because we do give of ourselves and it's exhausting. It is exhausting. To be able to listen effectively takes a lot of energy and takes strength. And I'm not complaining, but it does take energy. But you have to have a place where you can go, where you have either a hobby or a skill or something that you do that is away from the work. Because as you said before, you have to be a balanced individual. The more balanced you are, the better you're able to service everyone else.
That's right. And I promised myself that when I retired, first thing I would do would be to find a choir, because I hadn't been able to really sing since college. I'm not a great singer, but I enjoy doing it, and I found one. I found one that would have me.
Excellent.
I'm singing tenor in the Brahms Requiem in about 2 weeks for the
Excellent.
Brooklyn Queens Conservatory of Music Community Chorale.
Oh,
and it has been such a joy for me. And I'm exploring some of that right now, you know, and then I'll get back into it professionally. But it's just it's really a time to be a student of life again.
Well, I just want to thank you, Susan, again for being my guest on Faceted Gems. This has been wonderful. I hope, listeners, that you were able to learn and become inspired by what Susan has to say. That's part of the reason for this show, to expose you to people that are doing wonderful things, that have been able to use their skills and their talents in more than one way, and that's why we're multifaceted. Love everyone, empower, assist when you can, dream and believe in the positive energy within. And I'm so grateful to have had Susan in my life and have her in my life, and I'll probably hear her sing. Anyway, thank you again, Susan. Thank you, everyone out there. Please
thank
listen
you,
to... Oh, you're very welcome. I love you. And here we have again, we have the wonderful music of Brian Snow.